where an independent media organisation can be debanked, have its bank account shut, has recourse to huge amounts of money taken away, it's fascist. We've pissed a lot of people off over the years, a lot of people. The entire Zionist lobby, the Labour Party, Nigel Farage and Reform to the Tory. I don't think there's many people we probably haven't annoyed. Their goal was to destroy us. The exact quote from McSweeney was, we need to destroy the canary before it destroys us. Debanking is not a left-wing or right-wing issue. If you look at the idea of corporate fascism, where corporations and government are in lockstep to restrict people's human rights, to control the narrative in the media, to clamp down on dissidents, they're holding a huge amount of our money. I can't pay people. I literally cannot pay our team, I can't pay our contractors, I can't pay our freelancers. I do not know what Lloyd's reasoning is for this. You know, and this is not a new phenomenon. The number of Muslim organisations or Muslim individuals with no recourse to legal support who were unceremoniously debanked, no one wants to talk about that. You have people like Tony Greenstein, prominent anti-Zionist Jewish activist. He's been debanked recently.
What's been the response to what has been done to you by Lloyd's in mainstream media? Has this been picked up at all?
Of course it hasn't been picked up, Richard. Do you know the most interesting thing?
The radical independent news outlet The Canary has been debanked by Lloyd's Bank. That means that without warning, it's lost access to its funds and is unable to pay its staff. No reason's been given, but in the past, such actions have been targeted at individuals and organisations regarded as politically suspect, above all Muslims and Muslim groups. This flagrant attack on the freedom of the media has been entirely ignored by mainstream outlets. In the independent sector, we regard an attack on one as an attack on all. And it was my pleasure to welcome Steve Topple, the director of The Canary, into the Double Down Newswatch studio to tell us what had happened. Okay, Steve Topple, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure. I obviously love Double Down News and I love what you've done in recent weeks. So, yeah, thank you.
Well, I'll have you on again. So, Steve, we'll tell me what's happened with Lloyd's Bank.
Yeah, so we're in a bit of a catastrophe, I suppose is the right way to describe it at the minute. Lloyd's Bank have unceremoniously dropped us and closed our account. It only happened recently and we don't know why, and I don't want to speculate why, because, you know, The Canary is a famous or infamous outlet, depending on your viewpoint, and there could be multiple reasons why this has happened. But it's left us in a very, very chaotic position in terms of they're holding a huge amount of their money somewhere in the ether. And I can't pay people. I literally cannot pay our team, I can't pay our contractors, I can't pay our freelancers, and until we get this money back, we're kind of in limbo. You know, the team has been great, they're soldiering on regardless, because, you know, they're independent journalists, but they're also activists first, and for them it's not about the paycheck, it's about the mission, and you know, I respect that, but you can't detract from the fact that we have a team of marginalised people who are in very kind of desperate need at the minute, and it's... Yeah, it's been a very difficult few days, to say the least, this week.
How does it work, this? Do you get a phone call, do you get a letter, or do you just try and get money out of the bank and suddenly your account isn't there?
The account just shut, and I had to ring them up to find out, you know, what was going on. And even then, they've been extremely, extremely kind of nondescript with me in terms of I'm struggling to get information out of them, despite repeated phone calls, all of which I have logged. And we're still none the wiser as to when we're going to get this huge amount of money back from them and their reasoning for shutting our bank account in the first place. I don't know. And as I say, I don't want to speculate because the bottom line is there could be a legal case in this at some point, so I can't speculate. But it's completely alien to me. You know, people know what we do. There could be multiple.
But just in case people don't know what you do, just explain what The Canary is.
So The Canary's been around for over 10 years now, actually. We launched in October 2015. We're a very left-wing media organisation. We have always been disruptive. We think of ourselves as an online tabloid, whereby, you know, we have, I suppose, provocative headlines, but with articles that give people the nuts and bolts of a situation in a way that is easy to digest. And, you know, we have Am I allowed to swear on this show? I forgot.
You can say whatever you like.
Thank you.
Within reason.
We've pissed a lot of people off over the years. A lot of people from, you know, elements of the Labour Party to the entire Zionist lobby to Nigel Farage and Reform to the Tory. I don't think there's many people we probably haven't annoyed and frustrated over the years. But... you know, we, despite various ups and downs, which some of your views may be aware of, some may not be, despite various ups and downs over the years, we're here. And, you know, our strap line is, well, we've outlasted Morgan McSweeney, which we have. So,
but and that's relevant, of course, because Morgan McSweeney came for you in the past. Yeah. I mean, talking about downs, this isn't the first time the sort of powers of be that have come for the Canary and tried to destroy it. And this is all told in Paul Holden's book, The Fraud, isn't it? Just take us back. It's 2018, isn't it? They come for you last time.
Yeah, absolutely. So, look, what we do know about that situation is that Morgan McSweeney and Labour together set up a almost astroturf, I suppose, organisation called Stop Funding Fake News, which was linked to the Centre for Countering Digital Hate, Imran Ahmed. And this Stop Funding Fake News astroturf organisation effectively targeted the Canary specifically because of its support for Corbyn and because of the reach we were having at the time. You know,
you were identified as a problem, weren't you? We now know from internal papers.
Yeah. Well, the exact quote from McSweeney was, we need to destroy the Canary before it destroys us. Because at that time, you know, in the run-up to the 2017 general election, we were reaching 12 million reads a month. We were more read online than the Times and the Telegraph.
And just to be clear here, Morgan McSweeney was the person who headed Labour Together, yes. The think tank that propelled Starmer to power, later became Chief of Staff for Starmer.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, Labour Together's mission from the start was very obviously to oust Jeremy Corbyn, get Keir Starmer as leader of the Labour Party, and then get him into number 10. But we were classed as a roadblock in the way to that because of our reach, because of our impact, because people were listening to us. So Stop Funding Fake News launched this entire kind of smear campaign around us, accusing us of, you know, almost institutionalized anti-Semitism and fake news, and with the goal of, you know, cutting the head off our funding by stopping companies wanting to advertise with
us. Yes, they were going for advertisers, weren't they? Which was a very common tactic at that time.
Yeah, it was back then. Mm-hmm. Back then. I mean, it was a long time ago now, actually. But yeah, there was a common kind of thread, you know, from both the left, to be fair. You know, there's been targeted campaigns against the Daily Mail and GB News, which extend back years, but also from the right to the left. And we were the main target of that. And, that, you know, their goal was to destroy us.
And how effective was it? Because they certainly felt they'd been very effective at that time.
So at the time, it was undeniably effective. You know, we lost an awful lot of advertising revenue. It resulted in the Canary being effectively ostracized by the corporate media. You know, up until that point, I'd been on the BBC. The editor-in-chief at the time had been on Question Time, was quite often on Radio 4. You know, we weren't accepted by corporate media. We were never accepted, but we were classed as, I suppose, unavoidable. They couldn't ignore us as such because of the reach.
In retrospect, that was, in a way, one of the enormously powerful things of the whole anti-Semitism weapon, is it categorised people as not just as people you disagreed with, but people who were morally unacceptable, yes. And therefore the you know, ends justified the means in how you dealt with them.
Yeah, that was entirely the framing of it. You know, that we were somehow this institutionally anti-Semitic organisation that no one should associate with or listen to or read because our views were somehow abhorrent. Now, you know as well as I do, what we were saying about, you know, the illegal state of Israel in 2017, 2018 is absolutely no different to what a lot of more mainstream commentators are saying now about Israel. Yeah. We've been right all along, and I would note on that despite their best efforts, Impress, the independent press regulator, did a full investigation into the Canary over the allegations of anti-Semitism and found nothing. Nothing at all.
Yeah, you were completely cleared,
yeah,
weren't you?
Exonerated.
Pogrin and Maguire, the Times journalists in Get In, which do tell the story about the Canary, they don't mention that, the fact that you were cleared by Impress. What's been the response to what has been done to you by Lloyds in mainstream media? Has this been picked up at all?
Of course it hasn't been picked up, Richard.
It's kind of a rhetorical question.
Yeah, exactly. Do you know the most interesting thing that I have found, and despite, you know, us going after the organisation since it launched, GB News put out an article which was actually quite supportive of us. You know, it's in their interests because, you know, debanking is not a left-wing or right-wing issue. For Argent, obviously, the whole Coutts situation and so on and so forth. But yeah, GB News ran an actually fairly supportive article of us. And we've had, you know, the Free Speech Union, Toby Young's vehicle, which I would personally never historically or otherwise have supported or support in the future. Even the Free Speech Union have come out in support of us. But otherwise, you know, it's crickets from the corporate media, and we didn't expect anything less.
That's extraordinary. You would assume that The Guardian and The Independent and the BBC don't like you, but that's sort of irrelevant. You would think that the principle of freedom of the press would be terribly important. And there's a link here to the way Asa Winstanley, Richard Medhurst, Sarah Wilkinson, journalists who have written a lot about Palestine, have been arrested in recent years with not a squeak from the mainstream media at all.
No, nothing at all. And it's because I think they view us in independent media, firstly, as not... They don't view us as real journalists. They think we're the kind of this rabble of politically motivated activists who aren't actually, you know, don't have any skill in what we do. But also because it's an uncomfortable truth for them. The corporate media views itself as the bastion and the arbiter of news and journalism. Which it isn't at all, as we know, and therefore by default they view what we do as somehow not proper journalism, even though actually we are doing the work the corporate media should be doing. We are writing those stories about the powerful. They do go to editors and they get published.
Well, there's a classic parallel here with Paul Holden and the fraud, which has been enormously influential. Three figures within Number 10 have had to resign as a result of it, and yet still no one has reviewed it. They will bend over backwards to avoid mentioning the actual book. And then when it turned out Paul and Andrew Feinstein were being smeared by Labour Together, a disgraceful smear campaign against Paul. They were spying on his family and so on. No one was interested until by mistake, APCO, the company they'd hired to do, by mistake, some bozo on the ground thought his job was to smear everyone. And smeared Gabriel Pogrand, at which point it became a huge story.
Yeah.
But no one gave a damn when it was just Paul and Andrew.
No, they didn't, exactly. You know, and Paul and Andrew specifically, you know, the work they've done over the years, not least in South Africa around corruption there, and, you know, how government and corporations were so interlinked and, you know, the scandals are exposed there. But then, of course, the fraud as well. You know, they're worth their weight in gold, but the corporate media wouldn't see that.
It's also so bad and lazy. As you say, with Paul and Andrew, they'd been very active in South Africa. They'd exposed things in South Africa. They'd exposed Russian oligarchs and so on. Mm-hmm. But they did their standard default thing of saying, oh, link to the Russians, link to the Russians, yeah. Which you just had to spend 5 seconds on to know was patently ludicrous. But yet The Guardian was quite prepared to be the vehicle for this smear initially until mm-hmm. Paul pushed back. Anyway, we digress slightly. Yes. Let's go back to debanking and mm-hmm. so on. Of course, there's a history of this. Let's put this in context. About 10 years ago, Peter Oborne wrote about this a lot. Because in the context of the war on terror, all sorts of Muslims and Muslim organizations were being debanked.
Yeah, I was talking about this on the TikTok Live on Wednesday evening about the fact that, look, you know, this is we're acutely aware that this is nothing new, and we are a large organisation with a lot of public support. Actually, you know, post 9/11, and as you say, kind of war on terror territory, the number of Muslim organisations or Muslim individuals with no recourse to legal support, no recourse to funds, who were unceremoniously debanked, and that affected them until this day. Some of them, you know, no one wants to talk about that. You know, it's all, you know, it's like Farage was the first person who's ever been debanked, which
happened a couple of years ago. Now, Peter Oborne spoke very powerfully on this on Double Down News at the time, that the outrage when Farage was debanked, there had not been a squeak when all these Muslims.
No, nothing at all. You know, there was I can't remember who put it out, but there was a very good post on X listing all the organisations that have been debanked over the years, majority of them Muslim. And, you know, even more recently, you have people like Tony Greenstein, you know, prominent anti-Zionist Jewish activist, repeatedly, you know, whatever you think of Tony, repeatedly smeared and targeted legally or otherwise over the years. He's been debanked recently.
Yeah.
You know, and this is not a new phenomenon. And the issue with the Farage debanking, while, you know, we wrote on it at the time and we were explicitly clear that no one should be debanked. You know, this is an outrage. But he ain't the first person to happen to, and it's not like he's short of a few quid. And he, while Coutts was owned by NatWest, I believe, you know, this is a multi-millionaire who we now know. How many properties has he got? 27 or something, It's five, isn't it? He's got five properties, and some of them have not been.
Because the slightly embarrassing thing for him was at the time, Coutts, which is the sort of elite bank that he was debanked from, came out and said, no, actually, we debanked him because he's not rich enough.
Which we know wasn't true. Yeah. Poor Nigel. It's a terrible, terrible state of affairs. Yeah. But no, he was not the first person for it to be done to.
And you can't really function in the modern world. Of course, the Americans have used this weapon against Karim Khan, against Francesca Albanese, sort of lawmakers and UN officials who've spoken out about Gaza. And, you know, I remember talking to Francesca about this. What do you do in the modern world if you don't have any access to the banking system?
This is the problem. I think it shows... it shows, firstly, the level of potential interconnectedness between all these organisations. But moreover, it points to, you know, as left-wing, progressive, whatever you want to call us, organisations and media outlets, we bandy the term fascism around quite a lot, which I think is wholly appropriate. However, I prefer the term corporate fascism, actually, because, you know, you have... We're educated and we're led to believe that fascism comes with, you know, a kind of aggressive moustache and jackboots, and it comes marching in, whether it be Hitler, Mussolini, Franco, whoever, and that is fascism. And therefore, it's quite easy for the current proponents of fascism to reject the idea that they are being fascist. But actually, you know, if you look at the idea of corporate fascism, where corporations and government are in lockstep to restrict people's human rights, to control the narrative in the media, to clamp down on dissidents, you build in, you know, huge tech corporations, big banking, so on and forth, into what government are doing and the way they are intrinsically intertwined. That is what we're living in. And it is, you know, it's now at the point of where it's fascist, where an independent media organization can be debanked, have its bank account shut, has recourse to huge amounts of money taken away, with no recourse.
And presumably further down the road, even if the debanking continues, you do get the money back. They can't just nick all your money.
We don't know the reasons for it, and again, I'm not kind of speculating as to the reasons for it. We don't know why. My assumption is that at some point soon we will get the money back. That is an assumption because I do not know. I do not know what Lloyd's reasoning is for this. But I assume we will. You know, I cannot believe that we are under some sort of police investigation where the funds have been seized. I do not have any reason to think that's the case. I assume we will get the money back at some point. But it's just... As an independent outlet, you know, our journalists and the people who work for the Canary are under constant pressure all the time, as all independent journalists are. You know, we report on the most horrific elements of humanity at the Canary, whether it be Israel, whether it be the, you know, constant anti-Muslim attacks that are happening to individuals in this country, whether it be what Trump is doing in the US, whether it be what's happening in Sudan, the DCR, Venezuela. We deal with the worst of the worst. And that's a lot for our team to deal with at the best of times. Then you factor in the fact that so many of my team are targeted online. You know, we've got some quite prominent people who are very front-facing, who are constantly being targeted by the Zionist lobby for what they do, personal information about them leaked, you know, really personal, private things being shoved out online by the Zionist lobby, which is a whole nother matter entirely. But then you have this on top of all of that. You know, the team at the Canary are only human at the end of the day, and there's only so much they can take.
And this comes at a particularly bad moment for you in a way, because you've done this slightly surprising thing of you've launched this daily newspaper, sort of distribution newspaper. So firstly, talk us through the logic of why you've done that.
So there's quite, when I tell people about this, they kind of look at me and go, really? You're launching a print newspaper. And I am launching a print newspaper, yes. So away from the bad stuff, we've launched this daily print newspaper. We effectively did a trial run of it for 2 weeks in around 6,500 news agents across the UK. Monday to Friday at the minute, because, you know, delving into weekend territory is a kind of different kettle of fish and a different style of newspaper. People do think I might be a few pennies short of whatever by doing this, but actually I don't think I am. Part of the challenge independent media has is that it is very focused online. It is very focused, unfortunately, on its own echo chamber a lot of the time and is unable to break out of that. If you look at what GB News, while I can't stand them, what GB News has managed to do so well, admittedly with huge financing and the right connections, but what it has done so well, it's created firstly its own ecosystem where, you know, you have the TV channel, you have the website, and then you have the political party it's aligned to. And this ecosystem has then infested the entire rest of the corporate media. You know, the corporate media now runs stories that, oh, when this person was on GB News and said this, and they turn that into a story. And therefore it has encroached and forced its way into the corporate media ecosystem. No one on the left has ever managed to do that, really. You know, as we were discussing just earlier, you know, we were tentatively being on the BBC until Labour Together came for us. So the point of the newspaper is that we only reach a certain audience at the minute. And if you look at the demographics who still buy print, they are slightly older. They are more likely to be this cohort of 2.8 million people in the country who do not have internet access still, something we forget, you know, as a collective movement and a collective industry in independent media. There's still nearly 3 million people without internet access. There are nearly 5 million people who don't have a smartphone. And a large portion of those cohorts are people who still buy daily print newspapers. So there's that. There is the 11 to 12 million people who do not vote at general elections, you know, the potentially largest political party we will have in 2029, who are the poorer people in society. You know, I think around 54% in the last election of socioeconomic status is C2D and E, the poorest people, were the ones of that 11 to 12 million who did not vote. They still buy newspapers, this group. And so for me, launching a print newspaper was all about trying to reach and get a foothold into the territory where you are reaching, firstly, the people who need to be reading us, because all our stories are centered around anti-oppression and very much kind of class focused, whether that be then intersecting with racism or homophobia or transphobia or oppression more broadly. But also reaching the people who may not even have access to us in the first place to be able to read our stories online. So that for me is crucial. But also, just briefly, us kind of infiltrating and forcing our way into that market begins to make us unavoidable. Because, you know, one of the front pages we published during the kind of 2 week trial we did, we put Zionism as terrorism on the front page. No one else is going to do that. And by having those kind of headlines next to the Daily Mail, next to the Sun, next to the Mirror, next to even the Guardian, we're forcing ourselves in there. So we did this kind of 2 week test run of it. And regardless of what's happening with the debanking, once that situation is sorted, we're going to come back again, and we've got another 5,000 news agents who are going to come online on top of the 6,500 we had originally. So we're coming back actually with an even broader reach. We're looking at how we get copies into coffee shops across the country. We are working on getting ourselves into the big chain supermarkets as well. It's about reaching the people we need to reach, but it's also about, you know, actively and quite aggressively imposing ourselves into the corporate media space.
That's very interesting. So it's a way of aggressively stepping outside of the sort of internet left-wing bubble.
Yeah. And print isn't dead yet. And if you do it correctly, it is still a viable option. You know, I'm not going to say we're going to, you know, we're not going to make a fortune off it. If we break even, that's good enough for me. Because it's not about, this isn't a revenue generating exercise. This is about the canary reaching places it hasn't ever been able to reach before.
Well, good luck with that. Good luck with Lloyds. And Steve Topple, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Here at Double Down Newswatch, we depend on you. We have no billionaire owners or sugar daddies. It's that which enables us to be fearless and independent in our coverage. If you value independent media and the alternative perspective it provides, please do sign up to Double Down News on Patreon and support us in any way that you can.